Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh, well, guess beggars can't be choosy.
8:34, we continue. Quick, some news headlines. Russia argues Marine Corps beefed up presence in Norway is an attack. Russia warned there would be consequences following Norway's decision to invite 700 U.S. Marines for training. This is the same bullshit the Chinese do. Your mere presence here is an attack on us. You know? And again, look, throughout the history of the world, dictatorships, right? Dictatorships, not the march of free democracies, dictatorships have been the biggest problem on the planet. Not a whole lot changes, all right? Dictatorships. South Korea, United States canceled the Yulchi Freedom Guardian exercise for 2018. And again, you've heard from Mike and I, neither one of us have any problem with it. All right. Quote, following close cooperation, South Korea and the U.S. decided to suspend all planning activities for the Yulchi Freedom Guardian defensive exercise slated for August, Yonhap News Agency reported, citing a text sent to South Korean news services. The South and the U.S. plan to continue consultations over additional measures, Yonhap reported, saying. Last week in Singapore, Trump announced he was canceling exercises, which he said were provocative, as one of the exchanges in order to have North Korea denuclearized. Quote, consistent with President Trump's commitment and in concert with our Republic of Korea ally, the United States military has suspended all planning for this August defensive war game. Pentagon Press Secretary Dana White said in a statement Monday, quote, we are still coordinating additional actions. No decisions on subsequent war games have been made. Just know this. We continue to operate in Korea with lots of people. Okay? So, again, the exercises are designed to exercise muscles. Okay? And so, again, I don't think, my own personal opinion, it's not a big deal. Right? We have those capabilities. We can make a move anytime we want to. Okay, just my opinion. I could be wrong, but normally I'm not. The president ordered the creation of an independent space force, but Congress will debate it and ultimately have its say. So, space force, Star Trek is here. Also interesting news, Kim Jong-un is in Beijing for two days of talks with the Chinese. Chinese putting their hand on him, on it. So we'll see what happens. And remember, the long-term game is get the Americans off the Korean Peninsula, get them out of the Western Pacific so that China can push its hands and extend its reach over the region. The United States, and it's interesting, John Tulin was on, former Lieutenant General of the United States Marine Corps, now retired. But he was on saying, you know, we effectively have them hemmed in. Our presence in Japan, our presence in Korea, our presence in Australia, our presence on Guam, right? We have a presence in the Philippines. You know, we have essentially China pinned against the Western Pacific. So, you know, this is not unanticipated. Another headline, the historian for the Wisconsin American Legion resigns for him for embellishing his military service. Said he was a Vietnam veteran. He was not. Syria says U.S.-led strike hits troops in the east, but the U.S. has denied that. I think it's always interesting when these little things come up. Because we got blamed for the Israeli strikes. Iraqi Shiite forces and Syria accused the United States on Monday of targeting their troops inside Syria with an airstrike, a charge the U.S. denied, but that has ratcheted up tensions in the region. Iraq's Iran-backed Popular Mobilization Forces, the unit's umbrella organization, said in a statement that U.S. aircraft late Sunday night fired two missiles that hit a group of its fighters deployed along the Iraq-Syria border to prevent breaches by the Islamic State group. The statement said the attack left 22 fighters dead, 12 wounded, adding that Iraqi and Syrian authorities were aware of their deployment. We demand the American side issue a clarification for what happened, the Iraqi group said. The U.S. military spokesman, Colonel Sean Ryan, said the coalition was looking into the report. We are aware of a strike near Bokomal. However, there have been no strikes by the U.S. or coalition forces in that area. We're looking into who it could possibly be, but it wasn't the U.S. or the coalition. Interesting. Anyway, that in the news. All right, early bird, top five stories. NATO cyber team to add another teammate. Romania will join NATO's cyber training and research center next year. Yeah, Romania. These are former Soviet bloc countries, right? According to the country's prime minister. Interesting. Number two, Trump orders creation of independent space force. Number three, South Korea, U.S. cancel Ulichi Freedom Guardian exercise for 2018. Four, Russia argues Marine Corps beefed up presence in Norway is an attack. Five, why Massachusetts governor won't send the state's National Guard to the border. So, I'm not saying that I'm really smart, okay? But I'm not as stupid as other people you hear comment, okay? Remember what I told you that when, the nuclear peace is won, but the next thing that you're going to have to negotiate is the conventional peace? Because what the North Koreans did after the cessation of hostilities was they created a conventional threat, right, north of the DMZ that could range Seoul, that would be tantamount to a nuclear threat, right? And that's how, we stood, all right? Headline, Korea's seek withdrawal of long-range artillery near the border. South and North Korean army generals are set to discuss a matter of moving away their respective long-range artillery from the heavily fortified border in the upcoming high-level military talks as part of efforts to ease cross-border military tensions, according to defense officials. That's right. Where'd you hear it? You heard it first, right here. Anyway, the Ministry of National Defense has denied local media reports that said the two sides had already discussed the tension-diffusing measures during the June 14th inter-Korean military talks at the truce village of Panmunjom in the DMZ that divides the two Koreas. Multiple ministry sources have acknowledged the relocation of artillery is among the agenda items for the follow-up talks slated for as early as this month. Quote, both sides didn't make mention of removing artillery guns near the border, but talked about the possible reduction of frontline conventional weapons to prevent accidental clashes between the two militaries. As the artillery forces near the border are regarded as a major threat to both sides, the issue is likely to be discussed as a key agenda item in the upcoming talks. So, interesting stuff from Korea. Things that that need to get resolved before you can before I think you can actually talk about other issues on the on the peninsula. Another thing we talked about is a city in northern Syria called Manbij. It is a flashpoint between the United States and Turkey. It has been evacuated of Syrian fighters that are that Turkey considers terrorists that have been allies of the United States in the ejection of ISIS from the region. So, headline, U.S. Turkey began coordinated independent patrols near Manbij. The object of the patrols is to make sure that those militias do not, or that no other militia occupies Manbij and its security is maintained. So, interesting. Extension announced in Afghanistan for the ceasefire that went into work a week ago. So anyway, it was a one-sided ceasefire. The Taliban did not sign up for it. So, and then the other flashpoint around the planet most recently is Yemen's port of, what is it, Hodeidah? So, the Saudis have begun ground fighting there as of, a week, 10 days ago. So, they're seeking to eject the Houthis from the region. And really, if you believe what the Saudis say, they're trying to take preemptive action for what they believe will be a humanitarian disaster that will be huge. So, anyway, if you believe the Saudis at face value. I'm not sure that I do. This story has been around the Marine Corps, and it goes back to the Charlottesville incident. And so, talk about that real quick before you hear the Secretary of Defense. Headline: This is in Task and Purpose. Charlottesville neo-Nazi Marine found guilty at summary court-martial. Okay, remember summary court-martial, lowest form of court-martial that you can get. All right, a Marine who was accused of marching with white supremacists and attacking a protester at last year's Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville was found guilty in a summary court-martial on Monday, official told Task and Purpose. Lance Corporal Vasillios Vasilios Pistolis was sentenced to 28 days of confinement, reduction in rank to E1, forfeiture of two-thirds of his pay for 1 month. First Lieutenant Samir J. Glenn Roundtree told Task and Purpose, adding that the Marine Corps will be afforded 7 days to submit a request for clemency. Pistolas had been charged with failure to obey an order or regulation and making a false official statement under the UCMJ. Two other Marines from Camp Lejeune were arrested in May of 2017 for flying a white supremacist banner at a pro-Confederate rally in Graham, North Carolina. Sergeant Michael Chesney was administratively separated from the Marine Corps on April 11th for taking part in extremist activities, and Staff Sergeant Joseph Manning was discharged on December 8, 2017, Marine Corps officials told Task and Purpose. So, yeah, this is a story that that has been in the news, obviously, because of what came out of it. So, with that said, what you're going to hear now is the Secretary of Defense. He's speaking at the Naval War College. And if I can get this right, This is the introduction of Secretary Mattis, General Mattis. His introduction by the admiral that runs the Naval War College, whose name escapes me. I apologize for that. So, but again, about this is at the 9 minute mark, I think. In about 3 minutes, Mattis says one of the funniest things I've ever heard him say in public. All right.
It's a great honor to present Rear Admiral Harley, 56th President of the United States Naval War College.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, honored guests, distinguished visitors, deans, chairs, extraordinary professors and scholars, members of our Naval War College Foundation, family and friends, and the class of 2018. It's an honor to introduce It's my great honor to introduce our Secretary of Defense, the Honorable James Mattis.
Thank you, Admiral Harley, distinguished guests, those of you who took time to attend today. You're most welcome here. Very significant day, I would say, for our forces and for those of our allies and our partners on this beautiful, sunny, picture-perfect day. I say that with no tongue-in-cheek, since any day outside Washington, D.C. is sunny for me. I believe it probably adds 7 years to my life to be with you today. And for you mothers there who've got young ones who are yelling out a little bit, please stay in your seats. Whatever your little ones say can only add to the intellectual content of my remarks. So no problem at all. Those little ones are a reminder of why we do what we do here at the Naval War College.
Okay, and that's not the funny part of it, okay? The funny part is coming up in, where are we at? We're at 10 minutes. It's coming up in about 3 minutes. Okay. Like, what's going to happen is you're going to hear him. He's continually coughing, and he tries to clear his throat multiple times, but he can't. And then what happens is a guy comes up from behind and puts a bottle of water on the podium. And I'll stop it and kind of cue it up so you can make sure you listen to it. But it's funny as hell.
I would also tell you. Yeah, they really are, aren't they? Congratulations to all of you graduates on your achievements here today and to the families that stood by you as you burned the midnight oil here in a school known for its intellectual rigor. I would tell you that having tried unsuccessfully several times in my career to make the cut to attend one of the schools, I felt, to say the least, a little bit humbled when I got the invitation and surprised. I attribute that to the professional courtesy of your president here, because I owe him a lot. And in the Naval Service, we do not forget the debt that we owe to our shipmates. So thank you, Admiral, for inviting me up here. You helped to get me out of every jam that I got us into. But it is an honor to be with you because I couldn't make the cut. So obviously I come here with a certain amount of envy of those of you who got the benefit of this great education up here. And I would just tell you that we expect that as you turn to a fresh page in your lives, that you're at the top of your mental, physical, and spiritual game. You've had a year to refresh, to learn from each other, and a superb faculty. And I think your education will continue even after you leave here along the lines of what we just heard our chaplain pray for, that we continue to go forward and meet these challenges that surely wait us. Admiral Stephen Luce, when he founded the college on this rocky shore so many years ago, I think it was about 134 years ago, he wanted a lighthouse for leaders, a lighthouse where they could exchange ideas and broaden their perspectives and thus illuminate the path ahead for generations to come. And we saw it start immediately, certainly with then-Captain Alfred Thayer Mahon's lectures on sea power that served as the foundation for maritime strategy and shaping naval thought for decades and decades to come. Captain Charles Stockton, he came here. He added to that legacy when he developed the first code for international law for naval operations, which became the basis for our modern law of naval warfare. And certainly when we saw this campus exercise its intellectual prowess, helping to develop the Rainbow Plans of the 1930s and preparing its students for the challenges to come. That's what you get when you testify too often in front of Congress, by the way. But in the words of Admiral Chester Nimitz, he said nothing he encountered in the Pacific during the war was either strange or unexpected.
Okay, stand by. Here it comes.
Expected, for this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident.
All right, the bottle of water is getting placed. He doesn't see it. It's coming over his right shoulder as he's looking down at his remarks and speaking. Bottle of water is coming over his right shoulder being placed on the podium. So listen to this.
Thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said. I am.
That is the funniest shit I've ever heard say in public. God, I was watching the speech last night. Oh, my God. That, yeah, he says that at the Naval War College. Now, again, that is a comment that he would make in private, right, among Marines and stuff like that, because it would go nowhere. But, oh, my God, I thought that was hilarious. Anyway, the speech is awesome.
I'm confident that you're going to carry forward that legacy of what those officers found here or brought to this school, as you take your intellectual firepower forward and tackle the security problems of our time. Because we are witnessing a world awash in change, as former Secretary of State George Shultz described it, a world beset by the reemergence of great power competition, and we define the categories of challenges in the following way: urgency and power and will, political will. First, on urgency, we see it epitomized by the North Korea situation, as well as by the threat from violent extremist organizations, two very, very different challenges that have our ongoing attention. Certainly, President Trump's historic summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un proves, and I quote here, "the past does not have to define the future," unquote. But while a possible new avenue to peace now exists with North Korea, we remain vigilant regarding pursuit of nuclear weapons anywhere in the world. And meanwhile, half a world away, and despite our international coalition's significant success against ISIS geographic caliphate, extremist organizations continue to sow hatred in the Mideast and murder innocents around the world, from Europe and Africa to South Asia and the Sulu Sea. It is the urgency of this fight that compels us all to act decisively against terrorism, denying terrorists the safe haven they seek. And we carry out this counterterrorism campaign by, with, and through our allies and partners, with over 70 nations united in the Defeat ISIS campaign and 41 nations united under NATO's flag to defeat terrorism in Afghanistan. The second category of competition is military power, and we see the Russian Federation as the nation closest to us in nuclear parity and proven willing to use conventional and irregular power in violation of international norms. For the first time since World War II, Russia has been the nation that has redrawn international borders by force of arms in Georgia and Ukraine, while pursuing veto authority over their neighbors' diplomatic, economic, and security decisions. Putin seeks to shatter NATO. He aims to diminish the appeal of the Western democratic model and attempts to undermine America's moral authority. His actions are designed not to challenge our arms at this point, but to undercut and compromise our belief in our ideals. The third category is that of political will. And that is a potential rivalry, with China harboring long-term designs to rewrite the existing global order. The Ming Dynasty appears to be their model, albeit in a more muscular manner, demanding other nations become tribute states, kowtowing to Beijing, espousing one belt, one road, when this diverse world has many belts and many roads, and attempting to replicate on the international stage their authoritarian domestic model, militarizing South China Sea features while using predatory economics of piling massive debt on others. After World War II, our greatest generation, in collaboration with our allies and partners, built the open international order that has benefited global prosperity. It's unrealistic to believe today that China will not seek to replicate its internal authoritarian model elsewhere as it expands globally. China has benefited enormously from the open international order, but it had no say in drafting it. Today, how we engage with China and how the Chinese choose to collaborate, vice dictate to the world, will provide the roadmap for our future relationship. In response to these competitive challenges of urgency, power, and will, this last January, our Department of Defense released its first national defense strategy in over a decade, and this filled a vacuum, one of strategy-free actions. To protect America's experiment in democracy, our national defense strategy has three lines of effort. First, we are building a more lethal force our adversaries must know, work with our diplomats and within the international order, for if you threaten our experiment in democracy, it will be your longest and worst day. Second, we are strengthening our military alliances and building new partnerships, for history is clear. Nations with allies thrive. Every allied and partner nation officer here today brings value. The third line of effort is we are reforming and modernizing the Department of Defense for greater performance, accountability, and affordability, ensuring that we earn the trust of Congress and the American people. We have an obligation to spend wisely every tax dollar entrusted to us while adapting our department to tomorrow's security challenges. And this is to preclude us from being dominant yet irrelevant because we didn't adapt in the tradition of the Naval War College in the interwar years. In support of these lines of effort, this institution has embraced the ever-changing character of warfare, updating your curriculum to reflect the strategic environment of today and, more importantly, of tomorrow. If we are to uphold a rules-based order for the international community, one beneficial to all, military leaders must embrace the ethos of a fighting admiral as defined by William Toohey, describing an approach to war fighting in all domains. A fighting admiral is the ultimate embodiment of an adroit leader possessing an eagerness to close with the enemy, an unflappable ability to execute operations in the heat and confusion of battle, and the power to instill a fighting spirit in those under their command. After the year here, we expect you to be at the top of your game mentally, physically, and spiritually, and to work to maintain that standard throughout the rest of your career. You now have the credentials to measure up in the crucible of combat, and your character must do the rest. Your education here has prepared you well to integrate naval, joint, and coalition campaigns across all domains, air, land, sea, and now the contested warfighting domains of outer space and cyberspace. We are counting on you graduates to live and breathe this fighting admiral ethos, regardless of your rank or position, branch of service, or nationality. Don't shy away from the hard problems and even tougher solutions by saying that something is above your pay grade. Your nations and services did not invest a precious year of the finest education possible for you to take a timid view of your leadership responsibility. Keep your wits about you, keep your grace under fire, your civility with subordinates, inspiring those you lead with humility and intellectual rigor, and reconciling war's grim realities with your political leaders' aspirations. As you take your next steps, put into action our line of effort of strengthening our alliances and partnerships using your initiative, remembering that not all the good ideas come from the nation with the most aircraft carriers. Down in Washington, D.C., four statues stand in Lafayette Square overlooking the White House, and they are there as a reminder. These are statues of men who hailed from France, Poland, and Prussia. And they came, and I quote here from one of the monuments, to offer their swords to the American colonies, serving as fellow laborers in the cause for liberty during our Revolutionary War. These four men, Lafayette, Rochambeau, Kosciuszko, and von Steuben, serve as reminders, just as this War College student body does today, that America does not stand alone. No single nation resolves security challenges in this world. For all the times that I was privileged to fight for America, I never fought in a solely American formation as a U.S. Marine. And seldom, if ever, will you, in your future leadership roles, find you carrying out your mission without communication and collaboration across national lines, for your ability to build trust and harmony will be as critical to victory as your operational ability. So as you depart this year of study and newfound friends, remember, you are your nation's unconventional ambassadors, strengthening relationships in every interaction with allies and partners. The War College has prepared you well for this endeavor, with 66 foreign nations, nearly 20% of the student body, represented here today. So carry these relationships forward, reinforce them while forging new ones, for by knowing how to fight well together, you strengthen deterrence and help to hold on to peace for one more year, one more month, one more week, one more day as our diplomats work to solve problems. In closing, I want to venture back to the college's earliest days when Admiral Luce laid out his admittedly lofty expectations for this new institution. He said, "If attendance here will serve to broaden an officer's views, extend his mental horizon on national and international questions, and give him a just appreciation of the great variety and extent of the requirements of his profession, the college will not have existed in vain." You graduates now must give proof that Admiral Luce's vision was not in vain, for you carry our hopes, you fine young graduates of many nations, for a better world. And I am confident that thanks to Admiral Harley and his Newport team, you are primed to meet the many challenges that lie ahead. Congratulations to all of you, and thank you again for allowing me to take part today.
There you have it, the Secretary of Defense calling out Russia, the first nation since World War II to redraw political boundaries by force, talking about Russia's efforts to destabilize the legitimacy of the United States and other Western democracies, and then the importance of maintaining our relationships, our military relationships with our allies, and making sure they're strong, which is something that he's been all about since he it'll be interesting after his 4 years if there's a Secretary of Defense that gets around the world more than he does, because he does a little bit. He's constantly on the move. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, the gunner's going to join us. We're going to do gun talk, more of All Marine Radio. Coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.